What you waiting for? Put your back in it. Just a little more. Throw your whip in it now. Fill your body up tight. Work it hard and long. When you finish that,
the hip knocker.
Episode 166 of Talking Bollocks, brought to you by Go Loud. It's me, Terry Flower.
It's me, COB.
And this week we're joined by
Chris Kent.
Chris.
Myself, yeah.
How's things, pal?
Very good. How are you?
Thanks for coming up.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Good stretch away this year.
Delighted, yeah. Well, I got in this morning. I flew in this morning to Dublin, like, so I've still to go home. I
was from Cork?
Oh, no, sorry. No, Glasgow. I was in Glasgow. There used to be a flight from Cork to Dublin.
You can fly from Kerry to Dublin?
There used to be a Cork one. My brother was going out with a girl up here and he used to fly up and fly back. Long distance relationship.
The Kerry one's only a score or something, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like a separate. Yeah. It's like 1999.
It's not bad, like.
But yeah. Bad.
When you get the Kerry, then
bad for the environment, all right, yeah.
That's,
I suppose, yeah.
Flights going either way, that's why I look at it.
That is very true, yeah.
But then when you land in Kerry, it's honestly if you can get a taxi anywhere, it's like you're in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, you have to rent a car then and everything.
Well, is Kerry one of them spots? Is that not like
Kerry's very isolated, yeah.
Poorest spot.
No. Do you know, a lot of Ireland is very remote. Once you go past the M50, I'd say. To be honest, what do you think, Chris? I'm being naive saying that, no?
What do you mean by isolated? Like,
no, remote.
Yeah.
It's very sparse.
Yeah.
You know I mean, like, it would be...
There's not a very populated country, like,
no,
you know what I mean?
Empty, like, when you think about it.
It is.
Galway would be.
Yeah, but between Dublin and Galway, there's fuck all. There's Athlone and that's it.
Mm.
Nothing else.
No, I'm clueless. I don't know what I'm
And then when you go to Donegal, have you ever been to Donegal?
Oh, Donegal is a trek to get to.
Yeah, it's a trek.
Forget about it.
And then when you get there, there's nothing.
Yeah, forget about getting there. Even from here, from Cork one time, I had to drive up to Donegal for a gig.
And then you had to go through Dublin.
Oh, it was, up to Dublin and over across. So it's the bone.
What? You can't just go
left.
No, you can't, really, no.
Down the bottom left, you come up to the middle right to go to the top left. That's how
it's
stupid
crazy.
The country is.
You can go right up the middle in some air, but it's even worse. Mm. It's even worse.
That's heavy. That
we drove to Donegal twice, and the two times we went up, one was through Sligo, so we went across and up, and then the other one was up through the north, through the Ardens areas, and Red Handles.
See all the old lovely paintings on the walls and all that.
Nice muir and stuff like that, up through Bushmills.
Yeah.
Right, have you any zingers? Any of us? Chris, you don't have a zinger, don't you?
I don't know. I was trying to come up with one and I can't for some reason.
Chris,
can't
the whole People's
one.
Republic of Cork is depending on you. And you let them down.
What was the one we asked Micheál Martin?
Yeah, but that's because it applies to Micheál Martin. Would you rather Dublin win the next 10 All-Irelands or Sinn Féin win the next general election? Micheál Martin would have took any if it was Sinn Féin win the next general election. You know what I mean?
Chris, you're listening. Don't get
See,
political.
Well, I've a load of buddies from Dublin, actually. I went on holidays with them. Met them on a lad's holiday when I was 15. They saw me. Yeah. Still, one of them's the best man at my wedding and everything. They saw me. I was with my parents. I had like a little Wolf Tones t-shirt on and they were like, hey, do you want to come for a pint? They're all from Blanchardstown and Cabra, and I started hanging around with them then, like, you know. So one zinger, I don't know if this is even a zinger, constitutes a zinger, but I remember being in a chipper with them in Dublin, and I said to year one, can I get a sausage, please? And she picked up a normal sausage, and I was like, what are you doing? Because if you're in Cork and you're asking for a sausage, you will get a batter sausage.
Right.
If you wanted a sausage without batter, you'd have to say, I want a sausage without batter. That's how popular the batter sausage is. It's number one. Shorten it down.
That's a mad one, isn't it? Because like there is like your mum wasn't wrong. You got what you
asked for. She wasn't. No, but I had a big problem with it. Like, I was like, "What are you doing?" And the lads still give me a hard time to this day. What do you call actually another one? Is the the Mr. Freeze things? What do you
slush
call
puppy.
It? A slush puppy. That's not
ice
a slush
pop.
Puppy.
No,
yeah, that's the ice pop you're talking about.
Oh, is that what you're talking about?
The Mr. Freeze stick.
The freeze.
Because he done that.
What do you call them?
Plastic. You eat the plastic and all.
They're lovely. What do you call
ice pop?
Ice pops. Yeah.
Yeah.
Then what's a kill pop?
I got a bad
pop. Oh, kill popper is.
That's a kill pop.
That's a kill pop.
I got a bad one for this now. Because in Cork, where I were from, we call them hard drinks.
Fuck off.
Swear to God. Swear to God. Because it's a drink.
Chris,
it goes in the freezer.
In. Appreciate you coming in.
And then it goes hard. And I remember asking for one in Dublin when I was with my buddies. I went, I'm going to go in and get a hard drink. And they were like, what? It was like, you won't get a hard drink in here. And I was like, obviously, I'm one about these things because it was a nice sunny day. Like, you know.
Thought you were going in to get like spirits or
something. Hard drink. Yeah. And that's what they call them. That's what they call them, especially in the north side of Cork where I'm from. It's a hard drink.
So you're a Norrie.
I'm a Norrie, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. So we know what that means. We're educated.
Young. Yes, yeah. Yeah.
But a hard drink, that's...
A hard drink, yeah. And that's what they'll call them if you go there, and a sausage.
And do you call like slippers house shoes?
No, I just call them slippers.
Yeah. Yeah. Not everything is so literal.
Who would you call them house shoes?
No, call them house shoes. You call them hard drinks because they're drinks that go hard.
No.
Shoes that you wear in the house.
Yeah, a hard drink, like, yeah. Yeah.
Shimon has sent us a thing out there if you want to read that one.
Right. You're going to have to bear with me, Chris, yeah?
Okay, no bother.
If you won the lottery and could add either a swimming pool and massive water slide or a full zoo with tigers, lions, elephants, etc. in your house, which would you go for?
Oh, I'd say swimming pool all day.
Why
with
would
a
you
big
want
slide.
A zoo in the gaff?
A zoo would be very crack.
I don't know, like,
would it
fairly...
It'd be hard work.
Feed the animals and everything.
Yeah, feed, like, rare lions.
Oh,
yeah.
No. I definitely wouldn't like a zoo, man.
It's hard enough having a dog. You might, like, I have a beagle. Yeah. Like, I may as well have a pride of lions in the gaff.
There's a big, like, famous zoo in Cork, is there?
Fota. Fota Wildlife Park. Yeah.
I think it's better than Dublin Zoo.
It's class. It is class.
I've never been in Cork, I don't think.
Haven't you?
Never.
You can remember if you were there, all right.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think I've ever been there.
I definitely wouldn't like a zoo. Nah. Water slide, man, all day.
Yeah, but it's in Ireland, like freezing. Like,
yeah,
you use it, 30 days of the year.
But the cold water plunging, it's all about that now. Like,
so yeah, that's right, it's all about recovery nowadays. Yeah.
Get down a slide into -4, good luck, bouncing off the ice like a mamma rab.
Would you have a zoo, no? Or would you?
No, see, we
like
for that.
We like it. Yeah. Whatever he picks, I'll just pick the opposite. That's what we tend to do. But I think I actually wouldn't mind the zoo, no?
The zoo is weird, man.
I bring my kids
to the zoo, and whenever I see adults just walking around
on their
with
own.
No kids, I'm like, what are you doing with your life? Like, the zoo.
Like,
you know what I mean?
Get hair, like,
yeah, yeah.
How do you look?
And I probably did that before I had kids as well, but I just didn't really take notice that.
That weird
the zoo is a ridiculous place to go if you don't have children. Like,
yeah. That yolk and cork is supposed to be legit. Well,
it is class. It is class.
Yeah. And they're supposed to feed the cheetahs with the zip line. And everyone was queuing up, and your one comes up and was like, oh, yeah, we stopped doing that during COVID.
Why?
I was there like 4 months ago. I was like, COVID's gone about 2 years, you might want. I was like, what? The cheetahs have the social distance.
Why would they stop it during COVID?
No idea. And they never brought it back. They put like the meat
and they get them to run after it. I remember
they shoot the thing down, the cheetah goes chasing it. And everyone queues up at like 3 o'clock.
Yeah, that is class.
So everyone was queuing up at like 5 to 3 and your one comes out and goes, oh, that stopped during COVID. I was like, you think you brought a sign up? Because everyone knew to go.
Yeah.
I think there was a sign saying
they used to run. You've definitely seen them run. I remember that as a kid, but I can't. Yeah, vague recollection of that. Some chasing some meat or something, you know. Mm.
I said it already about Dublin Zoo. There's like barely any animals in it.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is mad. I only went a couple of months ago. I remember I said that a long time ago on the podcast, and I went a couple of months ago, and I remember thinking, there's fuck all there.
Yeah.
There's nothing happening.
Fota is probably.
Photos class. It is class. Probably we have a pass and all. We're just always down there with our kids.
I think
you know?
Pass gets into Dublin.
It does, yeah. We went there the last time we were here. My little girl is only 4. She was wearing a little kind of, it's like a leper kind of little skin pattern on her jacket, you know? And she was like outside, what are they again? The fast?
Cheetahs.
They were just fucking following her because she had this little jacket on and she was running and they were running after her and running back and... They were just following her, like, you know, because she had a little jacket on. It was mad.
So you don't even need to wait around the
street. No.
Bring a jacket and just
bring
down
a jacket,
That's a good one there. Fota, Dublin Zoo. I think I go with Fota.
I saw one of the most disgusting things ever. I don't even know if I could say it on the podcast. In Dublin Zoo.
Go on.
Was it really bad? Like, I don't know if I could say it, honest to God. We were at the elephant enclosure and I saw one of the elephants and I was like, I'm not imagining this. My wife saw, everyone saw, everyone was in shock. So, like, the baby elephant was basically eating something out of the mother's arse.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't see why you couldn't say that. Now, it is disgusting.
Well, it is absolutely disgusting. Well, I was like, wait, what the fuck is going on here? And the mother elephant was trying to kick her away and everything, and she kept coming back and taking another piece out and eating it. And I was looking it up, and it's apparently they do it all the time because it's an immunity thing. Do you know what I mean?
Eat the shite.
Yeah. It's an immunity thing.
Dogs do that, no?
They don't eat shit out of another dog's hole, though.
Dog's hole.
No. Like, it was actually it was rank, like, you know, make you thankful for vitamins that you could don't have to do that.
Yourself. Like, go in the morning.
Get a cup, go down to Pal in the Barrett or whatever, you know what I mean? There's simpler ways to get a vitamin into you. Like.
Have you ever been on safari, Chris?
Yeah, I did actually, yeah. Out in Scotland, of all places.
Really?
Yeah. A place near Edinburgh. There's a little safari thing. You drive through in your car and everything.
Oh, that's where the monkeys come and pull their window.
Yeah,
no,
there's lions and everything in there.
Yeah,
and they had a lion eating a cow, and my kids were traumatised. why is he eating the cow? There's a dead cow, like, on the ground, and the children were eating it. And not the children, the fucking cow.
That's some drug.
Well, it was a drive, yeah, yeah. Fresh, very fresh meat. Yeah.
You didn't have to sound like a waiver or anything.
No. Just roving through in my Corolla.
Yeah, and
just my car.
Put the window down the line to snatch that child.
There's a load of warnings about it. Like, you know, I don't think you would do it. But it is, yeah, there'd be monkeys on the cars, monkeys on the buses and everything.
Fuck
and
that.
Lions. Nah.
Boy, do you have to sign a waiver?
No, but like,
I'd like to go on a proper one, like, in the wild.
They do one with the backs of the cars are open and all,
yeah.
Don't they?
I've seen one like that. So that kind of led me onto this, because I was on safari in South Africa, and Terrence, you only recently discovered South Africa.
I was looking at it on the map, yeah.
So South. Chris, not you, Chris, the other Chris, our videographer, is from South Africa.
Yeah.
And that triggered you, Terry.
To look for South Africa on the map.
You were in getting your jabs, because you're going away.
Yeah, because I'm going away.
And you were looking at the map.
Yeah.
And what did you realise?
That South Africa is down the bottom of the map. But like,
South Africa is in the south of Africa.
Yeah, no, but I mean, I didn't realise how far down it was. Like, it's like, that'd be close to Antarctica, no?
Yeah, it would be, but like,
I just didn't realise it was that far down, that's all.
Where exactly did you think it would be? Like, in the middle of Africa?
To be honest, I thought it was actually bigger. I thought it was like a whole section.
It is.
Does that make sense?
It is. It's the bottom whole section.
But is it not like, is that not a country?
South Africa?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was a continent. I thought it was like Africa.
South America.
Yeah. So there's
easily mixed up.
There's America and South America, yeah?
Yeah.
Is it not Africa and South Africa?
No, the whole
so
thing.
So that's where
South
I
Africa.
Thought it was.
The whole
I didn't realise that it's just a country down the fucking bottom of the map.
Yeah, no, it's at the bottom.
Mm.
And you said it's close to Antarctica. You can get a boat from Argentina to Antarctica. So you're gonna go there next, aren't you?
Where, Antarctica?
Yeah.
I would love to go to Antarctica.
Would you?
Would you go?
I'd like to see it, definitely. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
I'd love
but
to.
But there's nothing there.
I know, yeah, just to see it.
There is.
Might be gone. Might be gone sometime. Be all melted.
I know, but I mean, I didn't realise there were shops and all there. It's probably a JD there. You'd get down there for that, wouldn't you? Come.
But like, what's in Antarctica? Do you know what I mean? Like, if it was on the way, if I was in Argentina and someone said, look, you can take about an hour over there and you're in Antarctica,
yeah.
I'd say, yeah, I'll do it, but I'm not going out.
It's a far way to go.
Yeah,
you need to be doing something on the way, break it up a bit, like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know a little fact about South Africa? It's only an hour ahead.
Why?
What do you mean, why? That's the
time. I mean, what?
Because
if you go to Tokyo, I think that's 2 hours ahead, isn't
it? Yeah, because it goes by how far across you go, not how far down.
Ah.
So there's one for you.
Big brother. Educated jump.
Yeah.
Know that.
Yeah, there's a little fact for you.
Yeah.
There we go.
So Antarctica, South Africa, that's a little, their next trip. He's going to Thailand, Chris. He's only ever been away 3 times.
Have you been to Thailand yet? No?
No, he's going like next week.
Oh,
Thailand, have you?
I've been like the load of countries. He's been like 3, and then his next one's Thailand, and then South Africa he's going to.
I've been to Thailand, yeah. I've been to a few countries, a good few, but I haven't, I've never been to Antarctica. What part of Thailand are you going to?
All the different
everywhere, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you said you were in there, no?
Yeah, great time. We lived
where
in Australia for a year. Came back through Southeast Asia then. We flew into Bangkok or something. Went up to Chiang Mai and came all the way down. Where's the island now? The Rayleigh or something like that. It was class. There was nothing on this island that we went to. Nothing. Just a kind of small little bar or whatever, like, you know. Monkeys up on your hut the next morning and everything. Proper remote, like no JD Sports, definitely.
Did you do that monkey island?
Yeah, we did. I didn't like that at all.
I went when there wasn't a sinner on the beach.
Oh, there was loads of monkeys when I was there, and I was like, I don't like this one bit. Like, they're all over,
positive thing.
They're all over looking for food. Do you know what I mean? There's so many of them. If they turn on us here, like, we're gone, like, you know, they'd rip us apart, even though they're only tiny little things. I was terrified. I wouldn't, do you know what I mean? A mouse in this room would annoy me, no mind. A thousand monkeys, like, no, I didn't enjoy it at all, the monkeys anyway. So there was no monkeys when you were there?
There was nothing. The best thing that happened to me on that island was, there was this girl, and she was like an influencer, and she had this big mad fancy dress on. I'm standing there in a pair of shorts and a t-shirt, sweating, like dripping in sweat. The heat was unbearable. She has this big fancy like wedding dress on. She's strutting that stuff, and a fella is following her with a camera. And he's following her, so he's not looking, and he trips. And big
no,
fell.
You've been framed, job.
Yeah, that was the highlight.
That is unbelievable.
The monkey island. There was nothing there.
I haven't heard of positive.
Get your money back, like,
monkeys.
If there's no monkeys.
Yeah, no monkeys, come up and get your money back.
They're like aggro and all, everyone's saying, like, don't give them food.
If you smile at a monkey, it's a sign of aggression.
sign of aggression.
That's hard, isn't it? Because you're showing your teeth,
If you bare your teeth at an animal, that's a sign of aggression. That's why like a dog growls. They just show their teeth.
So why do people go to the fucking island then?
Because they're Egypt's, bro.
Yeah, I think they like people that like monkeys, you know what I mean? Some people love them.
People that like monkeys.
Yeah. I didn't enjoy that at all. But what part, you're going all over though, yeah?
All over it, yeah. I can't wait to go over.
That's unreal though. It's a class spot.
Yeah, he was booking. He was like, where did you go? I was like, everywhere. Yeah. We couldn't tell you one place. We flew into Bangkok. And we flew out of Bangkok. And then we done like 50 islands in the middle of
it. Did you do anything? And did you go to any of the sex shows or anything in Bangkok?
No.
Oh my god.
They're all over there as well.
Oh, I would stay away from them, to be honest with you.
Did you go? I did, yeah.
Me and my wife went to one, like two dopes, like walking down the street. This fella comes over and he was like, we were drinking like whatever it was, and he was like, oh, how much do you pay for them? And we were like, he's real charmer, this fella. He was like, I'm Thai-ish, is what he was saying. He was like, I'm half Irish, half Thai. And he was shooting off bits of Gaelic and everything, like, you know. And he said, come in here, there's an old sex show on in here, and it's cheaper beer, free sex show. So we went into this thing, and I was like, this is like, it's weird. I wasn't, you'd think it would be a good thing to go to, wouldn't you, though, a sex show?
But yeah.
Very odd, man. Very odd.
We did go to something like that.
Did you?
And it was just like a big strip club, but nothing was happening, and we all felt, it was me, mate. And
you're not having any luck. There's no monkeys, there's no sex shows in the sex clubs. The monkeys were in there.
But like, we got in there, I felt mad weird, and your man was charming you. Like, I'll give you like free drink and this, that. And we got in there, had one drink, and we're like, you know what? This is a bit dodgy out here.
It was dodgy as, and I tell you, because I didn't enjoy it at all. This woman comes out on the stage, and I wasn't expecting eye contact, and she was locked onto me. And next thing, she takes out a banana, and I was like, geez, you're going for a bit of lunch anyway, thank God. Nah, well, this banana was made disappear. I won't say where it went, and it came back again, and it disappeared, and it came back again, and I was looking at the one, and honest to God, my stomach was actually turning. I wasn't finding it a bit sexy, like the banana was glistening, and the one was just caught onto my eyes. My wife is laughing her hole off on the same chair, like, you know, the whole chair was rattling away, like, because she was laughing so hard. And then another one came out and just started smoking cigarettes with her fucking...
Yeah.
Yeah. And blowing smoke rings and hearts
very
and everything.
By that, yeah.
You're impressed by that?
Yeah.
I don't think they. It might be vaping. No, I don't know. That was ages ago. Big huge one. But anyway, afterwards we were like, our show was weird. I didn't enjoy it, but it was free. Like, I'm not going to complain. Like, you know. So your one comes over then and slaps a big bill on the table, and I was like, ah, yeah, that's someone else's because we just got two beers. Like, you know. I went over to her, pure naive. I was like, that's not for us at all. Sorry, we didn't. And then she came back over and she was, no, this is the bill. Like, you know, it was the equivalent of €40 or €50, which is a lot of money over there. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, so we were kind of going, no, we didn't get anything. Yeah, man, the fella outside, the Irish fella was telling us it's all free, like it's all laid on, girl. And she was like, no, it's €50 on my butt. I was totally cowardly. I just went, yeah, give him the money, no problem. But my wife was having none of it. She was like, not a hope. This is a scam. You're not getting any money. There's the money for the drinks. That's it. And then these two bouncers came over and I was like, Jesus Christ, give them the money. Like, you know, it's not worth this.
Yeah.
And then my wife starts talking Irish to me and I don't know what she's talking about. I'm just like trying to figure out, what's arrogate is it? Is it Irish for money? Yeah, I couldn't think of that. And I was just like, Jesus Christ, give them the money. But fair play to her. She stood her ground and she just stood them down. And she was like, no, you're not getting any money off us. Like, you know. I was terrified. I actually thought I was going to lose my life in here. Two big, huge bouncers. Do you know what I mean? Speaking to each other. I didn't know what they were saying. I thought I was going to be next up performing on the stage. You know what I mean? That's the equivalent of washing dishes in these places. And we had the money. We had the money, but my wife just wouldn't pay them. She was like, no, you're not getting the money. And she gave him a prayer like, no. And we went outside and my heart was racing. I was like, don't ever do that again. It's not worth that. Like, you know what I mean? Jesus Christ. And then she disappeared and she went back in there. Back in, and I was like, oh my God. And she emerged about 2 seconds later with the two drinks that we didn't finish, like an old sup in each one on the table, like, you know. But nah, don't go to the sex shows, I would say.
No,
yeah.
I won't.
Avoid that if you could. Yeah. What would you recommend then in Thailand? Because the Monkey Beach was shy, the sex shows were shy.
Yeah.
They weren't good.
That beach in Raleigh where there was nothing, that was unreal. Just a nice beach, little kind of shop there.
Should you get that in Dolly Mount?
Yeah, I was going to say.
No, not this kind of beach. No. The weather, the nice clear blue sea. See all the fish and everything. Scuba diving was class there. Or snorkeling. Really enjoyed that.
Mm. Yeah. Did you go to that Moya Beach? You know where they made the film The Beach?
Yeah.
yeah. closed when we went there. You could,
that
you could
was closed as well.
Boat. Yeah, you could pull in on a boat. Because to protect the reef.
There was nothing there when he was there, was there?
They did it to protect the reef because too many tourists were going in.
Yeah, that was the same in Byron Bay in, yeah. in Australia. They had to close it because people were going down there scuba diving, taking little bits home with them, like, you know, breaking, snapping off a bit of the reef, and it's all dying. Like,
I'm actually thinking back to, like, did we do Ant on that? We done fucking loads, but we done the elephants. I keep telling
them. Oh, I did the elephants. Yeah, yeah, that was good.
Yeah,
that was
the good. Elephants, yeah.
Much better experience than Dublin Zoo, no?
I don't know about that. I was in scrubbing this thing with a toothbrush and I felt the thing around my ankle.
What?
Pulled, and I went, I looked at that one and it's just a little toy girl. Like, she's bleeding half the size of me. This elephant is there, trunk wrapped around my leg, and I was like,
what do you mean? What were you washing with the toothbrush?
The elephant.
You were washing the elephant?
Yeah, what show did you go to?
Oh, I was sitting on an elephant, like, just going around.
No, we done the opposite. We go to the ones that are rescued.
All right, yeah. I did the cruel one, yeah.
Yeah, you done the cruel one, yeah. You traumatised the elephant. It was ages ago.
Yeah, I was probably on him a couple of years earlier.
Yeah, his PTSD was passed on to me. Getting photos. Yeah.
Chains around his legs and everything. Yeah, it was kind of lousy, you know, but it was a good experience, in fairness.
Yeah.
Just going on the elephants through the jungle, like, you know.
But then you can go into these places where they fucking rescue them. And
is that right?
Where they're from. Like, this is bleeding.
I feel
Chris,
bad. No, I feel terrible.
Chris was rescued from a circus.
Yeah.
Here's Terrence. Terrence was born here. And you're scrubbing them and all. And they're bleeding, squirting you with water. And you're feeding them.
No way. That sounds way better. Egg,
and I got a fright. I was like, get that fucking thing on me. Do you know what I mean? Like, if he pulls me under this water, nobody's stopping it. Like, what are you going to do? Push an elephant?
Yeah.
Things like a fiesta. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. You're not going to get that thing on me. But yeah, that was good, Craig.
Anyways, Chris.
Yeah.
We'll jump into you now. So harping on about bleeding Thailand and everything bleeding else. So what we do with every guest, take us back to the start. Where are you from? What was life like growing up?
Right. I'm from Cork City, from the north side, Knocknaheeny, which has that kind of reputation that I suppose your areas would have up here, like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
At the Cork version of that, that's where I grew up. Mum and dad are all from there as well, obviously. Kind of a council estate growing up. Great. Funny family, like, very introverted though I was, like, you know. Just kind of sitting back, taking it all in, like, you know. Brilliant childhood, like, growing up. Just nice people. I'm from that area where I don't like when people make jokes. Like, they'll go, oh, I'm from that area, so I'm clearly like this. Whereas everybody from that area is not like that. Like, you know what I mean? I hate that.
Stereotypical.
Even people would say to me, oh, you don't sound like you're from Knocknaheeny. And I'm like, not everybody in Knocknaheeny sounds the same. Like, I think that's where you're getting a small bit confused, like, you know?
Yeah.
You have a thing in your head about Knocknaheeny. But yeah, I grew up just myself and my brother, a small enough family, loads of crack, great time, loads of entertainment. You know what it's like being from an area like that. It's fuck. You don't need a television, just look out the window, like, window TV in every room. There's always something going on the road. but I had a brilliant time, like, yeah. Went to school there, loads of friends. Yeah, unreal.
How was you going on in school?
I was never really interested in it.
Hmm.
I liked primary school, but when I got to secondary school, I didn't really like it.
Yeah.
And the school wouldn't have been great now, to be fair. It would have been rough enough, my school. Like, my class, I was in the second highest class, which was B or whatever.
Mm.
And they were even just wild, like, wild. It set the room on fire. Like, when I was in second year, they just lit the classroom on fire. And it's very hard to light a classroom on fire, actually. There's not a lot. I heard them planning it out. I was going to art and the lads were like, we're going to burn the classroom down. And I was like, all right. And they did. They went through with it. But I'm not going to say it because I'm still not going to give any names over. All right. Who did it. But they lit the classroom on fire in second year. And we were barred from going on all school tours. The whole class was held accountable. Like, fire brigade called and everything. They lit the bin, tried to lit the carpet. There was a hole in the wall. They shoved a load of paper in there. They lit that on fire.
At least he was determined.
They were, in fairness, they were very inventive. But I came back from, we were all interrogated then. They were trying to, you know, get us to give them the names. They were like, we know who it is, you just need to tell us.
You know, that old chest.
I was like, yeah. No, we just need initials. I was like, F you. No, that's not the initials. But it was like, I don't think, weirdly enough, I remember some of the teachers back then, it's probably a lot better now, but they were like, I remember the career guidance man came into our classroom with the CEO firms, you know, and I remember the teacher just broke her whole laughing. And she was like, what are you giving them up for? None of these are going to college. And that stuck with me for years, like, you know. No, I didn't. And I had no interest in going to college, but kind of
annoyed
the shit out of me, like, you know. And she was probably dead right, like, but... You know, it was just like, it really had a reputation back then. It's a lot better now, I think.
Yeah, but still, it's not a place for the teacher to say
no,
that.
No, like, I'll never forget it as long as I live.
If that's the fate of everyone in that classroom, then the teacher's doing the wrong job.
Yeah.
And like, if they have submitted to that, like, none of my students are going on any quarter
of
this.
Yeah, and she laughed her whole off. Laughed her whole off.
Job.
And a good few people in that class went to college, to be fair, like, you know. Mm. But I just remember that day, that was like, oh God, this is... Because even back then when I was, there was a whole thing when you were applying for jobs and you were leaving school, you wouldn't put your address on it. Because it's Knocknaheeny, Hollyhill. And if you were going for a job, you write down Hollyhill. You could get away with that, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And if you're in a fight... Knocknaheeny.
Yeah. If you're paying the housing tax, you put down Knocknaheeny.
Yeah.
I think like what you're saying there though, I think most kids like years ago would have had an experience like that with teachers.
Yeah.
Where it is different nowadays. Like, we have a lot of teachers that listen to the podcast and reach out to us and stuff like that. And
we've
talk
been
about
to a couple of schools as well.
We've been to a couple of schools doing talks and we see the woke teachers are doing nowadays.
Yeah, I think it is different because I've only heard brilliant things about that school now. But yeah. I'll never forget that.
But we have experiences ourselves, and most people we know would have experiences similar to that.
And I wouldn't mind, like, my school, they terrorise the teachers sometimes. Like, and I don't know how they put up with it. Jesus Christ, when I think about it, even just the simple little things, you know what I mean?
Mm.
We'd do anything but try and learn, like, you know what I mean? They'd be back from lunch break and there'd be lads jamming the keyhole full of springs and locks, and like, so the teacher couldn't get into the class, you know what I mean? Yeah, we'll get another 15 minutes out here while someone comes and takes a lock off the door. And then when you're in the class, they used to do this thing where the teacher would go to photocopy someone and the lads would go, let's change the whole class around. So like, they'd whip the blackboard off the wall.
Put it on the back wall.
Put it on the other wall and everyone else would turn around. And you put the teacher's desk on the other side. And then you're all just like sitting there when she comes in. And do you know what now? Looking back, she definitely knew. She was just like having the crack. She was going to the, and we do it every time. She was probably going to the staff room going, they're going to do it again, aren't they? Dopes, moving everything around the room, like, you know.
We used to do stupid stuff like
that.
That
as well.
At the time, you know, when you're doing it, it's hilarious.
It's hilarious.
You can't keep a straight face, you're sobbing, crying. And then you just look back and be like, why would you do that? Like, that's just stupid.
Yeah, why would you do it? I only kind of copped years later, the teachers definitely knew. We thought we were hilarious, but they were definitely walking into the staff room every time going, they're after changing it again, like they're so tick, like, you know. They were having a great time thinking about all that. Yeah. So
you mentioned there that you didn't end up going to college. What did you do after school then?
When I was 14, I got a job in the butchers in the English market, after school kind of job, like, you know. So I was in there for a couple of years and I kept on the job then after my leaving cert. I kept on the job in the butchers, which I loved. It was actually one of my favourite jobs I've ever had. Just in the English market, serving, kind of doing a semi-apprenticeship, like as a butcher, like, you know. And Christmas time after school and a couple of years after that, then I got an apprenticeship.
Mm.
That was the big thing when I was growing up, get an apprenticeship, never be able to work.
Mm.
Get an apprenticeship, you'll never be able to work. I got an apprenticeship, I qualified. The whole economy collapsed. And you couldn't become an electrician. Like, I got qualified. I went to Australia, to be fair, but I came back and it was just nothing. It was like, it felt like the biggest waste of time ever.
So what, you became a Sparks, is it?
Yeah, I was an electrician as well. Yeah. And I am an electrician,
I suppose. And then you moved to Australia.
Moved to Australia, yeah.
So you qualified then and left, yeah.
I qualified, left for Australia in 2007. Spent about a year and a half over there with my wife. We weren't married at the time. Had the time of my life, honestly. I was doing gigs as well. But I was working as a Sparks with a load of Irish fellas, the Dublin fellas that I was talking about there, employing Dublin fellas, even though they weren't electricians, just saying, yeah, he's not qualified yet, but he's a third year. He doesn't have his papers yet. You bring him on. And the lads were just taking him on. The lads had been never on a building site in his life. And he was getting paid then to be an apprentice's mate in part, like, you know. And it was unreal. I was getting paid to do gigs at night time. I wasn't doing too many now. I was doing electrical work during the day, taking a small bit of copper off the building site as well. I was making money. My balcony in part was just like full of copper. Me and another fella from Dublin, we were just taking a little roll every single night that we were taking it home with us and building it up, like, you know.
How much were we getting for that?
We got about $1,000 for it, like, at the end, that we split three ways. Yeah.
Handy, so
nice.
Yeah, great takeaway. Yeah. And come here, so when you went to Australia, you had already tried out the comedy, had you? Or did you try it out?
Yeah. Do you know how I tried comedy now, actually? It was, and I'm not messing when I say I was introverted. Like, I couldn't even talk. I wouldn't even, if I didn't know you, like, as a personal friend, I'd find it hard to string a sentence together to people, like, you know. And then Des Bishop came to my area and did the Joy in the Hood show. You know that?
Fucking Des Bishop got
I have to thank him. I didn't actually do that show, but if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't have done comedy because I knew some people on that show, you know?
Mm.
And I remember going to see them. At the end, he filmed the last one, like, you know? And I was like, this is unbelievable. This is brilliant, like, you know? And it blew my mind because my friends were doing it. And then I went to see comedy in little tiny pubs and I was like, this is unreal. Because you can't, like... If you look at someone like Tommy Tiernan or Dez in a big, huge Vicar Street, it's very hard to imagine yourself doing that, I think. It's a big jump in expectations. But then when you go to a pub and you just see people that like are just there like that, you'd never, you know, I don't know this guy from the telly or anything like that. And it's just young fellas getting up and girls and they're just doing jokes. And that's what inspired me then to go, I'm definitely going to do this. I was waiting to be asked, but I didn't. Nobody asked me to do it. So I just had to kind of convince myself. Well, I don't know why I just wanted to do it, like, you know. I was introverted, but I used to tell my mum and dad jokes that I heard in school. Like, they'd be all having a drink at night, and I used to repeat what I heard in school. And I used to always be taking little stories from them and impersonating teachers and impersonating them, like, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's it. I went into comedy then, and I probably did it for about a year and a half, I'd say, before I went to Australia. Just open spots, like, around the place, up and down to Dublin to the International Bar and all that, like, you know.
Tell us about your first one, your very first one.
My first one was good. I can't remember the jokes now. I wouldn't say it. It felt good.
Yeah.
For me, it probably wasn't. It was in a pub. There was about 19 people there. I just got a buzz for it immediately.
Yeah.
I wrote down some little jokes. I got a buzz straight away off it. It was probably 5 minutes, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Talking into a microphone. But everyone was laughing. And I was like, Jesus. I remember my wife was shocked when I said I was going to do it, like, you know? And then you just have a bug then.
Yeah. Is it more of a like a personal achievement than a sense of like a career achievement? Like, oh, you never wanted to be a comedian, you just actually wanted to be outgoing.
Yeah, do you know, it suited me as well, right? Because I'll tell you what I hated. As like team sports never really suited me because I used to hate it. You know, when someone took something too seriously or started roaring at you or something, I hated that. Even to this day, like if I was ever playing five-a-side, you know, when someone takes it too seriously, I'd be like, I can't take that at all. I'm like, what is going on with you? Like, you know, even down in Kilkenny, the comedians used to play the comedians. And then some comedians would be taking it seriously. And I'd be like, what?
Yeah.
There's children on the sideline and you're roaring at me for something that you're all so shit at. Do you know what I mean? I can't take that at all. But whatever it is about comedy, it's a solo thing. And I remember I used to box as a kid as well. And that was a solo thing. And if you lost the fight, you lost the fight. I wasn't blamed or, you know what I mean? You're on your own. So it kind of suited me. Like, I don't mind going at something on my own. It kind of didn't really suit me being part of a team and kind of, I would get too nervous or something if I was letting someone down. But if I went out and got the head digged off me or if I went out and had a shit gig, I could deal with it easily. I'd walk away and go, you know what I mean?
I would have thought that would have been more pressure for someone.
Yeah.
It would have been introverted.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, in a way, I don't know. It was a big, and it massively helped me because after a while then you just start doing more gigs and you meet people. And I met Eric and I met Willa. And I started coming up to Dublin and I started going on these little road trips. And after a while, then you're kind of doing a couple of gigs every week or whatever and building up the material and playing slightly bigger rooms. And I suppose it bought me out of my shell, really, like, you know, more than anything.
So did you have any goals set with it? Oh, we just roll with it.
Do you know what? Secretively, I'd say.
Yeah.
I was afraid to tell anybody. I was like, I'd love to do this as a job. And I remember I didn't tell anyone for years. I didn't even tell my mum and dad I was doing it. I didn't tell anybody I was doing it. I was even on the telly and my mother texted me the next day and was like, fucking, you never taught me you were on the telly. I just didn't bother telling. I didn't bother telling anyone. Like, I was on like the Craig Doyle, this panel show that was on RT at the time, but I was just terrified of it. Maybe it was not good or something. Like, and it was great. I was on it. It was Christy Dignam was on it. I was at a great time, but I just didn't tell anybody. So my mother just found out from other people that happened to be watching it. And they were like, your young fella was on the telly. And she was like, you never taught me around the telly. I'm a bit better now, a bit more assured of myself. And I tell everybody and I couldn't, like, my mum and dad could be in the front row now and it wouldn't bother me, like, you know.
Was that like a fear of failure? Like?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. Because I think the worst thing you could do, like inviting yours, that's the thing, staying to the team thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
I didn't want all my friends there. Like, if it went badly and all my friends are there, that's a disaster for me. But if they're strangers and I'm anonymous in a club and it goes badly, you know.
Who cares?
Yeah. You do feel, you eat the first couple, you're like, Jesus Christ, that's bad. It's the worst feeling in the world.
So you know, what's it like then when you go to Australia? Like, you're saying to your missus and your mates, oh yeah, we'll go over here and it'll be a sparks and that's how they will make a life. And then like you land there, you get a job and you're like, actually any open mics around? Or?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was happy enough doing it as a hobby back then anyway. And I didn't get many gigs in Sydney, but I was happy enough to work. I was having the time of my life working with the lads. Met more Irish lads. It was a really class time to be there. We're all in Sydney working every day, having a great time after work and at the weekends, and do you know what I mean? Like, just living the life, like, yeah. It was unbelievable when I think about it, like, you know?
How long ago was that?
That was in 2007. Yeah, 2007, so ages ago, like.
So you're at
comedy since 2005. And I went over there in 2007, and I'll never forget it. We moved into an apartment in Sydney, because we were in a dorm, like, with 12 beds, you know? And me, my wife, and one of my buddies moved into this apartment, and there was a... This is like, we had our own bedroom, which is luxury. And my friend from Cork, Roy, was sharing a bunk bed with a fella from Slovakia. Like, you could barely get into the room, honest to God. And there was two fellas from India living behind our telly. That was like the
this
setup.
In I the swear, dorm.
Living behind the telly. No, in our apartment.
Oh, right.
Like, living, like, there was a curtain from the telly to the wall. And they were like, that's the lad's room, don't go in there. So it was the maddest experience. And we moved in, and these two fellas from India who were lovely, and your man from Slovakia, were delighted, because they were like, you're speaking English, amazing. We're going to learn so much English. And then three people from Cork, like 2 days later, they were like, oh, it's, our English is getting worse, I think. So it was a mad experience. And it was a lot of partying and drinking, and I was young, and I loved it, like, you know?
Yeah.
I loved it. But the comedy then, I probably only done about two or three gigs in Sydney, and then we moved to Melbourne. We couldn't get work, and I drove over to Perth, and I just turned up to one of the comedy clubs, and I said, I'm a comedian as well, and they gave me a spot. Then I got another few spots, and then in Perth I was probably doing two or three gigs a week then for a couple of months before I moved back here.
So why did you move back?
I don't know. We always thought we were just coming back for Christmas, and my company back then were sponsoring me to go back, you know?
Yeah.
And my wife actually has a passport, Australian passport, because her parents lived there for a while and her brothers were born there. But we always intended to go back. And then we moved back here, and my wife got a job that she liked, and I got about 4 weeks work. But then there was a recession. That was it. There was nothing else. But then I started doing comedy full time. And for me, making a bit of money off comedy and that lifestyle is better than Australia. I would definitely prefer to live in Australia. But if I was living in Australia, I wouldn't have been able to do comedy as a job. Do you know what I mean? But I was living in Ireland doing comedy as a job, really. I was on the dole, like, but I got away with it for a couple of years. I got away with it. Yeah, but I got ratted out anyway. And I've told that story before. Somebody reported me and I got called in and I got dragged for it.
A little bail.
Oh, no, it was horrible because have you ever been investigated by them? No, the social welfare.
Don't you show?
Yeah?
Yeah.
Not the social welfare, but yeah.
I have. It's horrible. It make you feel so small, like, you know?
Yeah.
Now, this is back when I was doing comedy, honest to God.
What year are we talking, Chris? Sorry, just so we know.
Okay, so this is when I moved back from Australia, right? 2000. And so I probably got investigated 2008, 2009. I was doing a handful of gigs, man. I was still trying to make it in comedy. Most of the gigs were costing me money. I would drive to Belfast for no money just to do 7 minutes.
Yeah.
In that comedy club to go, I did all right, and then they'd book you for 10 minutes and you might get £100 6 months.
So it's just to have on the CV kind of.
Yeah. You're just kind of like, that's how you break into clubs. Like, you know, they'll book you for 5 minutes, and if you don't die in your hole, they'll go, all right, come back in 10 months and do another 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And we'll pay you, like, you know. So this was a time when I was trying to make it. So I was kind of going, maybe I probably should have been declaring it, but I was going, I'm not making any money. But then I got a letter from in the door, and we want you to come in. And I rang another friend who was knew someone at social welfare, and he was like, yeah, I'd say you're being, something's going to happen. Like, you know, they don't just call you in for nothing. And then I went in, and he was, I knew he was going to investigate me for comedy at that point, you know. And this social welfare officer was like, because I was about to go in, and your one was in bits crying that left the room before me. So I was like, this is not great. Like, you know? This fella's obviously a bastard, like, you know. And I went into the room and he was like, anything to get off your chest there before we start? And I was like, no. I heard you're a comedian. We heard you're a comedian. And I was like, yeah, I do a bit of comedy, like, but I'm not making any money off it.
Are you trying your best to be as as possible?
Oh, believe me. Believe me. There was no need.
Yeah.
He was no crack at all. And he kept on saying to me, there's a lot of money in comedy, mate. There's a lot of money in comedy, mate. He was like, we have you, like, by the balls, like, we have you. And I was just going, what are you talking about? I'm not making any money off comedy. And then I was like, sure, I get a few pints every now and again. Is that good? Do I have to come in and declare that to you, do I? And I said, I got €25 in Dublin last Wednesday. Sure, it cost me 50 to get up and down. He goes, you have to tell me everything. It was like, no, being interrogated. And I was like, so if I'd hoover the stairs for my mother and she gave me a fiver, are you telling me I'd have to come in and tell you, like, you know? And he was like, how many times have you hoovered your mother's stairs? This was all lost on him, like, you know? But it was a horrible experience because I had to go and get all my bank statements, all my wife's bank statements in case I was making that much money. I was filtering it through her accounts, my parents' account. Like, it was ridiculous. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're only short of raiding my house for jokes, like, that's all. But I kind of played it down, like, I did play it down a little bit, and I was like, okay, I went back and I said, look, this is what I made, and it was pitiful. I went down and I just owned everything, you know what I mean? And he started the investigation, and I had to go back into him a week later. He went through all my bank statements, right? He went through everything, and then he was like, it turns out comedy's costing you money. I swear to God. And he put me on something called the Back to Work Enterprise Allowance, which entitled me to more money than I was getting in the first place.
We don't need
to
pay.
No, I swear to God, yeah. And it was going straight into my bank account every week, so I didn't have to go down and collect it all or anything. But I had 2 years. I had 2 years on that. Do you know what I mean? So I had to kind of make it then. That was like my ultimatum. I never forget it. He goes, comedy's costing you money. And he goes, let's set it up as a business and we'll get you a little bit of money. We'll help you. He felt sorry for me, like... But I had a week of that worry before that, you know, what it was being taken away from me. Because obviously you couldn't get work as an electrician back then. There was nothing.
So he's responsible probably via comedy career, basically.
100%.
Yeah, you owe him more money.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I thanks a million if you're listening.
But yeah. Get brought in, get investigated.
Yeah, but he'd anonymous tip, is what he said. We
is
had
that
an
what
anonymous
said? Yeah.
Tip.
See, I always wondered about that, right?
So somebody saw me at a gig and it was probably 12 people in the audience. And they were like, take this fella down a peg or two now. Do you know what I mean?
His ego's getting too big.
His ego's getting too big. Who do you think he is, like?
Well, I always wondered about that. Like, what do people get from that? Do you know what I mean?
He used to get money for it, I think.
Did because they?
Yeah.
I'm
telling you now, because in that interview, you can get dragged for it. Like, before he did the investigation properly, he was asking me, did I know anybody on the dole that shouldn't be on the dole? And he said it would be in your favour if you knew a few people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So he really is trying to tee up, like, you know.
Tramps.
Yeah, he's trying to tee up. And he's like, yeah, you can remain anonymous and all that. We'll go easy on you.
Yeah, tramps, mate. Honestly, fucking that stuff really rubs me up the wrong way.
Because he kept on saying to me, there's a lot of money in comedy, boy. And I just couldn't. He kept naming, like,
PJ. And you were like, where?
He was like, PJ Callagher. And he was like, they're on the telly. Like, have you seen me on the telly? Do you know what I mean? There's a lot of money in football as well. There's fellas kicking a ball around out there. Will you go out and drag them in and see if they're on the dole? Like, you know what I mean? Just because they're kicking a ball against the wall, they're not Cristiano Ronaldo. It's a completely different thing.
So, tell us about the jump.
So when did you go full time?
Yeah, tell us about that.
Is it after the 2 years back to work?
2 years back to work. Well, technically, that was my full time, was when I moved back from Australia, like, you know, and I couldn't get work. So I was pushed. I was pushed, really, the first time, because there was no work.
So it was full time, but you weren't making money off.
And the investigation
came.
It
was full time, part time.
Yeah. The investigation came a small bit later, and that borrowed me kind of 2 years, which was actually, I wouldn't have been able to do it without that, because I was able then to move to Dublin. I moved to Dublin. I entered a few competitions. I got an agent and all that. I started doing supports then. So PJ Gallagher saw me. I opened up for him. And then kind of, you know, I got a festival in Dublin because of that. And then I just kind of took a show to Edinburgh, and I just started kind of, you know, just slowly building it up. It's slow enough grind, like.
You know what I mean? Every comedian says that. Like, it's such a grind for a comedian.
Yeah.
Just to get little in the pubs, and then you always have to literally go from the bottom.
Yeah.
From like 10 people to 20 people. To
you need it, though. You need it. You know, I wouldn't change it now, to be honest. It was hard. The first couple of years is hard, like.
Yeah.
Just fly. Even going over to England to do these random gigs for no money, like, but you're going, you're learning the whole time, like, you know?
Yeah. Every comedian has died of that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And, like, I don't mean this in a bad way, but you said you were introverted before you even got into comedy. So, as an introverted person.
Yeah.
And then you're telling jokes and then you die of death. What's that like?
Horrible. It's fucking, I don't care now, though. The water off my back now. I can separate it now. You know what I mean? I can go home and go. But when the first couple of times you die, it's the worst feeling in the world. There's nothing like it. There's nothing like it, man. And no one understands it, like, you know? I was in a rough pub gig one time, and there was a fella flicking matches at me, like that. And I swear to God. And I was like, a fella trying to set me on fire. Like, it wasn't heckling. Just trying to set me on fire there. And I was trying to make a joke about it. But I remember telling my mother about that. And she was like, what did she say? A good tradesman never blames his tools. And I was like, what are you talking about? I just told you there was a fella trying to set me on fire. You know what I mean? I'd never seen a tradesman work with a toolbox full of cunts, basically. Like, but I had the worst. I had a few bad death stories, to be honest. And any comedian that says they didn't, they're lying.
Ah, yeah.
They're lying.
It's inevitable.
They're lying. Yeah. Some of them will go, oh, I killed it, I smashed it, I killed it. I did a gig one time in the, and I've talked about this before, but in the Halfpenny Bridge. And I was working away. I was living in Ratmines at the time. I was working away on these little new jokes all day, and I was all excited going in, you know. I go in and there's about 15 people in the room, maybe 20. And the host is up there, and it turns out about four of them had English, you know. So, but I didn't know. I didn't really see this thing. I wouldn't even take that into account then back then. Like, so I went on. Most of the crowd don't speak English, as if I can do anything about it. Like, I can't speak any other languages, you know. And it was so silent, and I kept going. I mean, now, like, I could hear myself sweating, you know, and my heart was flying, and I actually started panicking, and I started talking to the promoter at the back of the room, and I was like, I don't know what to do now, to be honest. I actually don't know what to do anymore, like, you know. I mean, nothing coming, you know. And this lady stood up then, and she was like, can somebody please help him? One of the people that spoke English in the crowd was like, can somebody please help him? And I couldn't even talk for about a day after. I went straight out to my flat in Ratmines. I couldn't even sleep. I'd put on a DVD. You know, Michael Fassbender's Hunger. I don't know why. I hadn't watched that yet. It was all wrapped up in cling film. I took it out and I put it on, and I was just watching that. I was numb to the core. Numb to the core. But if that happened to me now, I would just walk off and go, sure, what did you expect? Nobody could speak English, like.
Yeah.
But back then I was like, it's me. I'm done. That's it. It probably took me a couple of weeks to shake it, like, you know. To get rid of the feeling. You have to get back up and do it again.
When did you feel like you became a full-time comedian? As in you were like, right, I'm a comedian. Chris Kent, the comedian.
Yeah. I'd say when I wrote my first show, like, so 2012, when you go out with your first hour and you bring your hour over to Edinburgh, like, you know, that's a big deal. You do Edinburgh, you do every day for a month over there in August. You bring a show over. You try and get people into the show. So when I started doing my big kind of an hour show, instead of 20 minutes in a club or 15 minutes in a club, so... When you try and sell tickets, and I remember I sold out a little gig in Whelan's then. That's when I felt like, this is it, now I'm a comedian, you know.
Is that Edinburgh show, the one where you won't put the tweet up?
Yeah.
And they're not, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That one person was at it.
One person.
That was very clever, that.
That's what I was
That was very clever.
You dived on that, you're like, yeah. I was like, that's marketing.
That was marketing. That was genius.
Because I don't think it was...
I don't think she consciously did it.
I don't know. I think there was something.
To be sensational. Yeah.
Something happened the year before as well or something. She tried something similar, I think.
Oh, did she?
Yeah.
Because I know she's not the only one who's experienced something like that.
Yeah, loads of people do it to one person.
Like 100 people went in and 99 shows were sold out and one person went to that one person's show and you're like, no, like that happens. As you said, there was 12 people at your show, fell a flick of matches.
It's nearly every comedian in Edinburgh for the first time. You go in somewhere, there's just no one at the show. And you kind of have to ask them, like, are you sure you want to be? I'll talk to them. Look, there's only six of you. Like, this is probably going to be shit, but we'll do it if you want to stay there, like, you know. But two people. I did a show to two people one time, myself and Eleanor Tiernan in London, and it was actually ended up being lovely. But that happens all the time in Edinburgh. It's tough, but you come back. It's like a gym for comedians, you know.
Yeah.
You come back and your jokes are kind of bulletproof then. You go into the laughter lounge, there's 400 people there waiting to laugh. You're just after being through this intense month of Edinburgh, like, you know what I mean? Someone shouts something out, doesn't matter what happens.
Yeah.
Bulletproof.
Yeah, you're kind of fucked if your show revolves around a lot of interaction with the audience. So,
yeah.
Anyone in here from blah, blah, blah?
Yeah,
There's five people.
Talking to empty seats, like.
Yeah.
Nah, that's when I started really feeling like a comic, though, when I started doing that, and then a couple of years later, touring shows around the place, like, you know.
So what was your first show? You done in Edinburgh. Where did you first perform over here, then?
Where did I first perform? I did one in Whelan's, I think. No, I did the Workman's Club.
Yeah.
I did the Workman's Club. It was a show called Plugged In. It was all about kind of being an electrician, a shit electrician and all that. Just a lot of jokes. And it's kind of all about being from where the area I'm from as well, Knocknaheeny. A lot of jokes about that. And it's great. It was great crack. Like, you just get a great buzz out of seeing a room full of people coming out to see you. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. And a lot of family and friends now, a lot of favours being kind of asked, like, you know.
Yeah.
Getting everybody in. But yeah, it's class.
We had Eric Lawler on recently and he spoke about how he thinks his accent plays a big part in making people laugh.
Yeah.
Do you think your accent does that for
you? I'd say so, yeah. Yeah, I'd say so. Because some people are laughing before I say a joke. Like, so.
Yeah.
It definitely does. People just start laughing. I'd be like, hello, how's it going? It's great to be in Glasgow. And they'll just be people laughing. I'd be like, I haven't done any jokes yet. Like, but yeah, it does. Yeah. But even, because I find the Dublin accent very funny, like, you know, so that's why I know. I'm not just saying it's from my perspective. I find other accents very funny. So anything that's like my accent is obviously different, you know, and my cadence is different. And when I moved to Dublin first, I really had to slow down how I spoke And that lent itself to me becoming deadpan and storytelling, like, you know, because I would speak very fast and people wouldn't understand.
Yeah, because I've seen obviously bits of your comedy and you do speak very slowly.
Yeah, I do, yeah.
Especially when you're interacting with the crowd. It's just...
Yeah.
Just, and where are you from?
Exactly.
Where do you work?
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whereas you're sitting here and you're like, so I'm from Knockahini and I went to the zoo. Don't want the zoo anymore. Yeah. I went down and like, Jesus, slow down, mate. Like, we're going to be doing the podcast in 20 minutes.
Yeah. I'll slow it down.
What's the hardest thing about being a comedian?
The travel, probably.
Yeah.
The travel. Driving home at night, getting to bed at 3 o'clock, and I have two kids, like, getting up the next morning. They don't give a shit what time you get in. They're just in and hanging off you at 7, like, you know.
Yeah.
To travelling, probably, yeah. Yeah. But then it's great in another way because you get to go to Australia and places like that and, you know what I mean, America, and it was unreal, like, but the travelling on the road after a gig, that's the hardest part.
Yeah.
But you get to hang around with funny people, though.
You get to hang around, yeah, and writing a new show, maybe, when you've nothing. When you just finish the show.
From scratch, like.
Yeah, from scratch. When you've nothing, that's hard because you feel like you're shit again, that's it. You literally have nothing and you're back to that.
It's like back to square one.
Back to square one. You've not, like, you've zero. And then you have to go and go, how am I going to turn this into an hour now? Mm. You know what I mean? You have a little idea. I've notes in my phone. I don't even know what they mean that I've taken that I thought was funny. Do you know what I mean? I'd be like reading them and I'd be like, woman on a train with a biscuit. Mm. Like, what does that mean? I wrote it down in September. Like, I thought it was funny for some reason. Do you know what I mean? I didn't expand on it. Yeah. I have nothing. I've just a load of notes that are just like so random. And then I might come across something and go, oh yeah, I think I know what's going on there. How do you find the gigging, the live podcasts?
It's tough.
Do you find them tough? Yeah.
No, it's tough putting them together.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? And getting guests in.
Yeah.
I think the easiest part is, like, he'll say the opposite. The easiest part is our content.
Mm.
Like, because we open up about half an hour just us talking, telling people where we've been, what's going on, a few jokes here and there, stories, grand. Then we bring guests on. To me, that's the hardest part because, like, imagine you're booked in.
Yeah.
Shows on Saturday. You text in on Wednesday. Oh, sorry, lad, something's come up.
Oh, yeah.
Like, how shows is going to collapse on itself.
Yeah.
And you're like, not only is Chris gone,
yeah,
but we have to replace him. Who do you replace on 2 days' notice?
Yeah.
That's going to be suitable as well.
Yeah.
You're not just saying, come on in.
Mm.
It's like, we need someone who's actually going to be good.
Because even if you don't get someone in, then you're thinking, right, if we're not getting someone in, we have to do another 20 minutes, half an hour content here.
Yeah, Do you do stuff with the crowd and all at the live ones then as well?
Yeah.
Yeah, interact with the crowd.
Yeah. You have to.
But not like comedies, you get me? Like, well, it is, but it's not.
Yeah.
It's a buzz. It's not like a structured joke. It's just a buzz. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It might be like, where's everybody from? Anyone here from the south side? And
north side.
You're posh.
Just a little bit of sticking, a little bit of back and forth, and things always happen, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you come out and you see somebody. I remember on Vicar Street, like when we were behind the curtain waiting to walk out, I remember seeing somebody we knew was up on the table dancing, waiting on us to come out, and she got dragged out. So, like, instantly,
open up with that, like,
instantly, I think, and look before anything, I'm going straight for that, you know?
Yeah.
Well,
that's gas. And did she not get back in?
No, she ended up getting back in. But I was like, what's this? Because she was a yoga teacher. And we were like, this thing is doing yoga and meditations on a bleeding Tuesday.
Yeah.
And getting fucked out of Vicar Street on a Saturday, you know?
Before the show even starts.
But, like, so there's, like, on the spot stuff.
All that stuff is great in the room, like.
Yeah.
The National Stadium as well, do you?
Yeah.
Like, what's that like?
Weeks ago.
That was the fourth time that we done that.
Oh, he was at a Wolf Tones gig there years ago. But it was a long time ago now. It was probably even before I did comedy. And
what was that like?
It was unreal, but I was well into it back then. Like,
yeah,
me and my buddies actually ruined it. They were recording a videotape and we ruined their. I still have the tape at home. The special filming of the Wolf Tones, you know. They were starting off with a nice slow number like fucking Grace or whatever. And the camera was panning out from them around and out into the stalls like to us. And everyone was sitting down. Every single person was sitting down. And there's five of us standing up in the middle of the fucking stalls, like you're one away, you're a geek, like, you know?
Yeah.
Just like it tops off kind of way onto the, we're in the kind of Celtic Symphony level then at that stage.
Yeah, yeah.
But I remember they were telling us all to sit down and everything and we wouldn't, so I was cringing looking back at it, but they were great crack in fairness.
Yeah.
Never got the box there, but I went to that anyway.
Chris, I was saying that during COVID, you had to give comedy up.
I did.
And go back to being a Sparks.
Full circle, man. Life repeating itself.
Yeah.
That's genuinely the most nervous I've ever been in my life. Take the first gig out of it, take everything out of it. I hadn't been on a building site for 12 years, like, you know what I mean? And going back on site after that. I don't know what it did to me. It just, I was just, And it's mad because I was in the middle of a big, huge tour. I was just about to do Vicar Street. I was just about to do, I was properly felt like I was getting a break, and then COVID happened. I was in a train station in England, and I was flying home like to do some gigs. You know, I was just about to go to the airport, and this whole thing kicked off, and Leo Varadkar's little speech over in Chicago. And at the time, we were expecting just the bigger ones to go. Everyone was, that's what the word on the street was. People were like, oh, it's only going to be 1,000 seaters. It'd be 500 people inside. That's the maximum, like, you know. And then everything just went like that. It was mad.
Yeah.
And I had sold all the tickets. That's the thing. So my tour was, I was after spending that money in my head. My Vicar Street, like, was nearly sold out a couple of weeks later. My Everyman in Cork, that was all sold. All the work was done. Yeah. The show was finished. I was like, this is paying my rent now, like, you know, for 4 or 5 months, like these couple of shows. But then they didn't happen. Just rug pulled out. To be fair now, about a week of feeling sorry for myself. And then I was in England. The weather was unreal. We got a small bit of compensation. Like, we got some money over there. Like, it was like the pup, the equivalent of a pup here or whatever, you know. And then it was unreal. It was like I was never so happy because I had my family there. I had two small kids. The weather was sunny. I was,
you were living in England at the time?
I was living in England at the time. I was running every day. We were going to the park every day. So for that first lockdown particularly, I really, really enjoyed it. Like, I really enjoyed it. But we always had planned to move back to Ireland anyway. So we were moving back then in the middle of that, like around August time. So it was like during the second lockdown, we had to move back to Ireland. And then when I moved back, at that stage, and it looked like comedy just wasn't coming back at all. There was a time, I mean, I was just like, I started putting out the CVs then, and then I was terrified I wasn't going to get a job as a electrician either, because there's a 12-year gap in my CV, like, where I didn't do it.
Yeah.
Because of the recession, but I just never went back to it. Like, you know what I mean? It's a big old kind of, where's he been for 12 years? Doing gigs. Do you know what I mean? What kind of...
Yeah.
Then I ended up living in my childhood bedroom with my wife and kids there for a couple of months, which was great crack. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's weird. I'm supposed to be playing Vicar Street and then going into childhood bedroom, wife and kids. Happy to have it, obviously, very grateful. But there was a while there where I didn't think I was going to get a job even. And I was like, what is going to happen here? Do you know what I mean? What is happening? But luckily, I just got a phone call out of the blue and some fella heard that I used to work with. He was with the same company I was with. And then he went, I can get you back in here. Like, I put your CV to the top of the pile. I told him, you're good. I vouched for you. Like, you know. And that was it then. I said, do the safe pass again. Back on the sites.
Were you worried that, like, what if I forget what I'm doing here?
Yeah, that's what I was terrified of. And you know what? I convinced myself I need to know everything. No electrician knows everything and how to do every single thing. It's a kind of a vast enough trade. Like, you know what I mean? You're always doing different things. Some fellas are good at containment. Some fellas are good at doing the panels. Sometimes they're good, you know? That's what I was terrified of. Mm. And also people knowing me. Not that I was even had much of a profile back then. But then, of course, I went to do the safe pass. And your man from the safe pass was like, Chris Kent? And I'm like, I haven't introduced myself yet here. So how do you know that? And then he's asking me for selfies. And this is when I thought comedy's never going to come back. All of a sudden, then I'm doing a selfie with it. It's the saddest selfie in the world with the man doing the safe pass. And we had to be 2 meters apart for it, like, you know? And then I went back on the site. And it was, I actually get heart palpitations now thinking about it the first couple of days. And I was in a big pharmaceutical site as well. You know, even if you were working the whole time, it's nervous going to a new site with a new boss and all that. But after a couple of weeks, it was like, this is the best thing that ever happened to me. It was brilliant.
Why?
Do you know what? I was afraid of it. I was so afraid of it. And all of a sudden then I was like, Jesus, I'd made so many jokes about being a bad electrician down through the years. I think I started to believe them, like, you know, but it's obviously only jokes. I was actually fairly handy at it and I enjoyed it. And it was like the pressure was off. I was getting more. I've never had that with comedy. With comedy, if you're not working, you're not, there's no money in your account. You're self-employed. You don't get holiday pay. You don't get anything like that. You know what I mean? So if you don't have gigs, you're not, the diary's empty. Your wallet is empty, basically. Then I went back working as an electrician. It was way better money than I was on as a comedian. You know what I mean? Every Friday in my bank account, I was like, this is the life, like, you know, this is the life. So I was kind of enjoying it from that perspective then, like, you know.
And did you think the dream of comedy was dead then?
A little bit, yeah, a little bit. I didn't expect it to come back at all, to be honest.
Why? What did you not expect? Know. Comedy as a sector to come back or Chris Kent as a comedian?
For a while, I didn't expect the comedy to come back because I remember, I don't know if you remember, they kept on pushing things back and things getting locked down again. I'd say my Vicar Street was announced about 50 times. Do you know what I mean? It's October. I was like, I'm not even going to say it now, to be honest. I'm not even going to say it because I don't even believe it myself. And then the gigs slowly started to come back then. That's when it happened. We were allowed in smoking areas and there was like 15 people at the gig, freezing cold, lashing rain. And I was working full time at the time, but these gigs were good money. They were like these government gigs or whatever. And my agent was like, do you want to do these? There's 8 gigs here in a beer garden in Cork. They're only allowed 15 people maximum. And I remember being on the stage and it was freezing cold. Like you could see your breath and it was lashing rain. And it was brilliant. And there was 15 people there. And it was like, this is just like the beginning. This is just like the very start when I was an electrician playing to 15 people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Except I'm out in the rain. And I loved it. And then I started to get the itch for it again. It was fine when the gigs were not there. I was happy enough being an electrician, like, you know what I mean? But when the gigs started coming back, then you get a bit of a taste of it again. And then they started letting more people in and all that. And
I find it mad, the dynamic that you have in your head where you're just like happy to go back to being an electrician. It's not like as if like you're all or nothing for comedy and you're going to be this big, huge comedian. You're like, I'll go back to being an electrician.
I would have been, yeah, but I'm not proud. I'm not like too proud to do it because I've family and I've bills to pay. And if the comedy's not there, I have to do something.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, and I went back on site and it was awkward for a little bit, but I was like, then I was glad of it. And then I was like, these fellas have employed me again and I'm enjoying it. I'm on good money. You know what I mean? Good work. Weird, like for a while, like, you know, but it was just as well. I was kind of, people wouldn't even be confident. This is how much of a profile I have. They wouldn't even be confident to say, one fella came up to me in the canteen and he was like, are you anything to Chris Kent by any chance? That's the way. Are you anything to Chris Kent by any chance? Like, you know what I mean? He wouldn't even say.
As if one family, there was two Chris's.
I was like, I am, yeah. He's like, I love your comedy. But I was like, well, that's when I didn't know if it was going to come back or not. But you'd miss it, like, but at the same time, when it wasn't there, it was those first couple that came back, gave me a real bug for it, like, you know?
Yeah.
Did you get any inspiration from being back on the sites?
Yeah.
Like comedy inspiration?
Loads.
Yeah.
Loads of stories. But just about doing the two of them at the same time. That was the real kind of. When the gigs came back fully, my tour kicked off again. So Vicar Street actually happened and all these gigs happened. But then I was also at the same time doing 60 hours a week on a building site. Like, you know.
You're doing Vicar Street and you were still
I was leaving work. I was arriving in Vicar Street in my Snickers gear, like driving straight from Cork. Doing a sound check and then doing the gig and then going straight back down to Cork to do work the next day, like, you know. It was surreal. Like 1,000 people there and then in the canteen the next day, like.
You don't know that full well.
Yeah.
I do that.
You still do that.
It's surreal, isn't it?
I love it.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I'm like, right, tomorrow's Monday. To go to the office, you fucking.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just another day. I don't know. I'd hate to sit there because you'd just be sitting with last night. Dissecting it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It dwell on me.
I don't. No, I think it's grand. I just get up and go about my normal day as well.
It gets easier the longer you go.
I think maybe it's a fair thing. I'm like, I don't want that. So I'm rather.
No, I get it. It's like, it's nearly a humble thing, isn't it? To go to work. Like, I don't mean it like that. I just mean, obviously, you still work. And I don't walk, but it doesn't mean that my day changes the following day. The following day, I wake up, I have my shower, I go for my coffee, I do normal shit that you would normally do.
People
think like something drastic happens in your life.
Yeah.
You're like, no.
Check
like
into a penthouse somewhere. Yeah.
There was a few people shouting and screaming last night and enjoying that night and I was on the stage, but nothing changes today.
Nothing really changes now.
The only thing is people that I work with don't even, like they know the podcast, but they don't know to what extent.
Really?
So I could be in work and they'd be like, you sound a bit hoarse, are you sick? I'd be like, oh no, I was just asked something last night. They'd be like, all right, Grant, so what's your plans for today? And they'd be like, there's 2,000 people there last night.
That is class.
And they have
it is
little,
class.
Or they'd be leaving the office and they'd be like, are you coming in tomorrow? And I'd be like, no, I'm going to work from home tomorrow because like I'm going to fucking the gig tomorrow night. Like, you know what I mean?
Is that a conscious thing though? Do you prefer them not knowing as much? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't want
to. It's like, John, at the start, remember at the start, like you'd say something, you're like, my auntie and my cousins are going to hear that. And I do think that about work. And, you know, like, if you get the slight inkling that they know, and I'm like, oh, cringe again.
You think they'd be just combing the thing, like just trying to picking away all the details or whatever? Like,
I don't know. It's cringe about which is mad because it's out there. It's telling people listen. To
yeah.
And I'm like, oh, what if them like 3 people heard it? I'm like, oh no.
Yeah.
You know, it's mental, stupid stuff. Like,
I was reluctant to give up the job, to be honest. I was happy trying to do both of them. We were trying to buy a house at the time, and it ended up being what this show is about. But my wife was like, ah, this is mad. This is mental. Because I was doing crazy hours on the building side at one point and then 50, 60, 70 hours a week and then driving up to Dublin, driving up to Belfast at the weekend. So I was gone. I was out of it, like, you know what I mean? I was gone. But she, luckily, I'm very thankful, she convinced me, like, to just, I was terrified to give that up and go to comedy.
Mm.
First time around, it was easy because the recession happened and I lost my job. this time around, I had to hand in my notice. I've never done that for comedy.
Yeah.
Even though comedy was going exponentially better, I had to hand in my notice and say, thanks, lads. I can't do this anymore.
Yeah. There's something poetic in there, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like walking in comedy
throughout
your whole life.
Yeah. Full circle. Like.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. And did you move to... So you said you lived in England. Did you have to move to England for comedy?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I moved to Dublin first. Lived in Rathmines for a couple of years because wasn't a whole lot going on in Cork. Like, so I moved up to Dublin and was doing all the gigs here. And while I was living here, I was flying over to London doing them little gigs, like, you know. And then obviously you're going, what about London is where to be now? Like, that's where all the gigs are and the TV is. And so then I moved to London for about 6 years and that was it then. I live just outside London. It's easier to say London, a place called St. Albans, but you'd be in London in 15 minutes, like, you know.
And do you think that's changed now? So you said you moved there because of lack of opportunity.
Yeah.
If you were starting out now,
wouldn't move at all. Wouldn't go. I wouldn't. Nah, not a hope, because it's all online now. And that's what's after break and everything.
Yeah.
There's no TV at all. No, I've never really got much TV. I don't need it. And now it's like, that's what everyone's on social media. And that's
where life was 30 years.
Yes.
Was on social media.
Clips.
Them, and then you just get caught up.
Yeah.
Watching all the reels and the clips.
Yeah.
Like you said, the short format, it's on social media.
That's it.
They're just posting and posting. What a great way to just grow.
Oh, and it blew up. Like my wife said to me then when I was leaving work, she said, if you're going back to comedy, throw yourself into it. I've about 8 shows written. She's like, hey, put them all out there on social media. Like, cut them all up and put them out. And I was like, all right, so, and I kind of left my job and I kind of almost kept my job for a bit because I dropped the kids' school, went home, learned how to edit, learned how to do this stuff, properly treated it, and then was looking up how you increase your followings and all that. And I was putting up a video every day for probably 2 months, and then the algorithm starts snowballing or whatever, like, you know.
Yeah.
And it took off.
Yeah.
And now it's like flying, thank God.
Is this like, are you talking like TikTok and all here?
TikTok,
as well?
Instagram, yeah, Facebook.
Yeah.
Mad.
I would have been the instrument member. Do you remember when I first came across Chris?
Go on.
No, I was just saying in general, because I came across you on Instagram.
Was
Instagram Reels, wasn't on TikTok or anything like that. Yeah. Remember what I was saying? This Cork comedian fella.
Yeah, sorry, I thought you were going to say the moment.
No,
remember.
I just mean.
Yeah, but like this, we're trying to get this across the line weeks now though, Chris.
Yeah.
You've just been
flapping. Oh, flat out, thank God. Tour has gone mental.
Mm.
It's unreal though. I'm literally living the dream, like, you know.
Yeah. A busy comedian. That's
And it just makes you grateful. Like, I like people say, you went back to work for 2 years. I genuinely mean that was the best thing that ever happened to me.
Did it hurt your ego or anything?
No, it didn't. Being honest, it didn't.
Yeah.
Nah. It felt a bit like, do you know what hurt? The thing that hurted the most was I had that money spent. I had Vicar Street. I had all these tickets sold. And as a comedian, you're working up to a tour every year. So you're going, you write the show. That's the hard part. You start off at zero. You write your hour. Then you start promoting your tour. All the work was kind of done. I felt like I was after kind of going and building someone's house or something and spending a year on it. And then they just went, nah, I'm not buying it now. Do you know what I mean? I felt like I put all the work in and then someone went away with the money, like, you know.
Yeah.
So that was the hardest part for me. I wasn't massively, my ego wasn't really, nah, I was happy enough. Because when you're living in your childhood bedroom with your wife and kids, you're like, I have to get out here.
Mm.
I stay here or I get a job.
Yeah.
It's that or the other, like, you know.
Did I read something that you were named Cork Person of the Month?
Yeah.
What?
Mr. September, yeah, that was the me.
Mr. September.
That's a title I give myself, yeah. But I thought it was a joke, being honest. I genuinely did.
Who the fuck?
I don't know, it's a thing apparently, yeah. There's a load of people like Roy Keane, and a load of people have got it down through the years, you know.
Throughout the year, but then
Cork Person of the Year at the end of it, like, it's like the 12 of you go off against each other, you know.
It's very hard to take Cork seriously.
It is, isn't it?
I know you're so proud and you're like the People's Republic and we're the real capital, and like, relax, like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Person of the Month, Terry, come on.
Mr. September, yeah. You wouldn't take,
well, like, who's in the bracket? Who's in the bracket? Who can be called that?
Anyone. Loads of people, like Frank and Walters, a great band. They got like August or something. They ended up winning it. I was against some serious, like, I was going, this is a joke, because I genuinely ignored it the year before because I thought it was a joke. It was in my inbox and I was like, oh, whatever, yeah. And I didn't think it was a joke, but I was like, that's not serious. And then they came back around and my wife was like, I know, just go, just why not go in and get a little picture with a black person of the month, you know. It was brilliant. But I was up against proper, like, people that do great charity work and everything. So I was like, I really don't want to win this and take it away from people. Like, people that do, like, just go out of their way and volunteer and doing charity work. And, you know what I mean? Like, the woman that set up Penny Dinners probably would have been nominated down through the years. And I just do comedy. I already get enough gratitude from doing comedy. Like, you know, I didn't need this thing. But it was great crack being at it. It was like, they were nominating a Cork person, an honorary Cork person. They were like, we're going to nominate who wants to be from Cork. It was Dahi O'Shea this year, an honorary Cork person. He's a Kerry man, like, you know. So it was funny. It was very funny. And that was the day I was in Vicar Street this year. So I was at the dinner. We were just like, a free dinner. Free dinner. No problem.
That
it was lovely. But Dahi went on for a bit, so I had to take it with me. So I had to take it with me. It was going on a bit about being from Cork. And can I take this away? So I got it to take away.
But it was weird. He's not even from Cork.
I know. Yeah. But he just, it went on a bit. The speeches went way over, like, you know. But it was great crack. My mum was there and my wife was there and we were just having a laugh. Mm. There was another girl from my area, actually, that was Denise O'Sullivan, who plays for Ireland. Yeah, like, she was one of the people of the month as well. Can't remember what month she was now. But
who got off the year then?
Yeah.
Frank and Walters won it. Frank and Walters, the band. No. Do you know that band? Ah, you definitely do. Did you see The Young Offenders, no?
Yeah.
Never see that programme? This is the song that a man Billy sings on the bus.
Right.
After all, I really love you. Sure you know it.
I love how Tyrone sat nodding his head.
Yeah, you know it. It's a great tune. Great tune. Yeah. They're good. They're a class band. I saw them at Electric Picnic. They're proper. Yeah, they're class.
Chris.
Yeah.
Have you earned the plug?
I do.
Aunt coming up.
You're currently on tour.
I'm currently on tour, yeah. All over the country. And they just put on another Vicar Street in April.
Oh.
Third Vicar Street.
Oh,
so April the 25th. Love to plug that.
You get your picture on the wall.
What? For what?
Come here, it's all a myth anyways.
What do you mean?
Do you know backstage in Vicar Street, all the walls covered with everyone who's played there?
Yeah.
Supposedly if you do it three times again.
Go away.
Supposedly.
Oh, do you know what the worst thing? Oh, you just have to remind me of something there now. I got a Nando's card.
The black card?
No, a high five one. Years ago.
What's that?
A high five one was free food for you and five of your friends, right?
That's better than a black card.
But it's only once, right?
Oh.
But then somebody got onto me in the laughter lounge and they said, here, do you want a high five card in my Facebook? And I was like, yeah. But then they said it to my agent as well. This lady here is trying to give you a high five card. So I took the two of them. And myself and my wife went to Nando's on, what's the one over by Exchequer Street there? You know the one by the International Bar, that's small in Nando's. Yeah, the first one we went to.
Yeah.
And there was only two of us, it was meant to be five. And we rinsed it. Like, we were like, everything. So then we went to the other Nando's in Mary Street,
on Mary Street,
the other side of the city with the other card. And I bought all my friends, all the Dublin lads and my wife. And I was like, can we definitely get everything now? But whatever we want for this card. And the five of us took the piss now, like no one's business. Like, you know, it was just, and all the lads were slagging me going, oh, you're a celebrity. Oh, you're a celebrity with all the chicken and all that. And I was like kind of half mortified, but having a laugh, having a laugh about it, you know. And then one came over to me while we were eating the chicken and she goes, can we get your photo there? And I was thinking, I actually went so red, lads. Can we get your photo, please? And I was like, oh my God, and all. The Dublin lads are brutal for slagging, like, and they were just slagging the shit out of me because of this anyway. I actually went purple, like, I had to go to the toilet. They were like, he's proper famous, like, his picture's going to be on the wall. That's what we were thinking, like, you know, his picture's going to be on the wall here now and everything. And I went to the toilet, man, and I actually threw water on my face. I was gone so red. And then I was walking back to the table and one of the Nando staff says, come here to me, what team do you play with?
No way.
So he hadn't a clue who I was. Nobody knew who I was. And of course, my friends heard this as well. And they were like, oh, Jesus, that was even better. They were like, they don't have a clue who Chris is. And then there was this very embarrassing kind of, I was like, I think you think I'm someone else. Like, I don't know if you still want my photo. It was the most cringe thing ever. And I went up to the manager and I was like, I'm just wondering, like, who do you think I am? Because I'd like to know who you're mixing me up with, like, if you want my photo, you know. And she was like, I haven't a clue. I don't know who you are, but you have one of these cards, so we have to get a photo with you, like, you know. And there was two women behind the counter cooking the chicken, and she says, will you jump in a photo with him there? And your woman just, no. straight to my face. I'd rather stay back here and get burned by the grill, like, you know. And then she asked the other one, and she was like, will you get in a photo with him? And she was like, I'm Asian. And that's all she said. I'm Asian. I don't have a clue who he is. And I was just standing there then. And I just had to go back and get the picture with all my friends at the table. I don't know what they wanted it for, but my imagination was, you know, that thing on the wall, celebrities coming in. But that's when I was on the Dole as well. So I didn't really want my picture on the wall. Definitely, there was a bit of heat on that. Do you know what I mean? So I was like, well,
Did you declare that to your man in the meeting?
I declared it. Yeah, I did. Yeah, I never declared the Nando's, actually. Yeah, I'd love a black card, though. That's the dream.
Yeah, that's a big one, isn't it?
I live on Nando's, like, when I'm away.
Free Nando's wherever you go. Yeah. Without the card, bang.
Tell me someone who has it.
Ed Sheeran.
Anyone Irish?
Yeah. Shane Todd is an Irish, Northern Irish comedian. Yeah. I think he has.
Want to get him on the podcast?
He's fantastic.
Can you put a word?
Oh, absolutely.
Put a word.
He's brilliant. I will. Yeah, 100%. I think the Hardy Bucks had them for a while as well. Yeah.
They must get had them.
Is it not a lifetime thing?
I think it's a year. You get it for a year, and then they'll renew it.
If you're still famous in the year,
that's legit. Grant the Nando's.
But that's like serious. Do you know? I believe it. I said the card is serious. I want one, believe me. I'm fucking begging for a Nando's black card. I'm after about 12 Nando's the last. Do you know what I mean? I just go, that's all I do when I go away.
Yeah, Nando's. It's mad because it's on your doorstep, but when the second you go away, you're like, I'm gonna Nando's. Like, live around the corner from a Nando's.
It feels like the healthiest of, you know, the kind of takeaway. And I love the way you go up and pay, and then it's like you can just strut out afterwards. I don't like hanging around looking for the bill. And
you pay first.
Yeah, you pay. That's for me, it's a big thing. Like,
and then you ask for a glass of water and you don't.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Coke Zero.
You about that. Yeah. So hang on. You're on tour at the minute.
Yeah.
Another Vicar Street, 3rd of April. Yeah. Where do we get the tickets?
3rd of April, is it?
No, 25th of April. 25th of April.
Sorry, 3rd of Vicar Street on the 25th of April.
Yeah, yeah.
Good one, 30.
The Chris fella as well. I was there, no problem.
Yeah, yeah.
4th Vicar Street on the 3rd of April. Yeah. Where do you get the tickets?
ChrisKenComedy.com. There's all the tickets are there. Or Ticketmaster, wherever you want to go.
Right. Yeah. And is that the only one you're trying to sell?
There's a few more. Like, there's a good few of them after selling out, thankfully. But there's all over the country.
They're all around the country.
There's a seventh every man in Cork, if there's listeners in Cork.
Yeah.
Which is mad.
Yeah.
So there's Chris blowing my head off.
A theatre near you.
Yeah. So just go
all over the place. ChrisKentComedy.com.
And go on to his Instagram, ChrisKentComedy.
Yeah. Do. So that'd be great.
Follow him on Instagram and get everything there.
So
thanks a million, lad.
Get Shane Todd to give us a show.
I will.
Nando's to give us a show.
Nando's. Well, I'll try and get Nando's for.
Three of us are looking for it. We'll knock down the Nando's after this. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Thanks very much for coming on.
Thanks a million, lads. It was a pleasure.
Boom.
Subscribe to this podcast for free on the Go Loud app. What you waiting for? Put your back in it. Just a little more. Try your wits in it now. Fill your body up. Walk it hard and slow. When you finish that,
the hypnotic. Come on.